dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. I'll be guiding you around the battle space of the war of ideas once again with fabulous guests today. Faith McDonald is going to be our lead-off batter from the Institute for Religion and Democracy, one of the people deeply, deeply immersed in what's happening in Sudan. On the 9th, we will hear whether the people of southern Sudan decide they wish their independence, and if so, whether they will get it, or perhaps whether they will get more genocide at the hands of jihadists from the north. Segment 3, an incredible interview with the new chairman of the Homeland Security Committee of the House of Representatives, Congressman Pete King of New York. An incredibly courageous, thoughtful, principled man who is taking on political correctness and Sharia. And this will be one of the most important, if not, in fact, as I believe, the most important set of issues that the Congress in this new 112th session takes on. So stay tuned for that remarkable conversation with a remarkable legislator. Then finally, we'll be talking with Sarah Carter. Bob Gates, the Secretary of Defense, is gutting our defense program, particularly with respect to the future threats this country faces, announcing today a host of budget cuts. Sarah Carter will be our guest from the Washington Examiner to explain what that is likely to mean for our military at a time when China, among others, is building up their ability to attack our forces, our allies, and perhaps even the United States itself. And that's the subject for my conversation with you now. Yesterday, the Wall Street Journal had above the fold on its front page a picture of an aircraft that looked, well, strikingly like the F-22, the United States' top-of-the-line, state-of-the-art stealth air superiority aircraft. No, it wasn't the F-22, of course. It was the J-20, an aircraft that the Chinese have evidently been busily building, probably from designs stolen from the United States, maybe with help from their friends in Russia. But in any event, a new, apparently highly capable and presumably quite stealthy fifth-generation aircraft. Now, what that means, according to an old friend and colleague, Rick Fisher, who is a specialist in these Chinese military programs, according to the journal, is that there may soon be in the Chinese inventory an aircraft that is superior to the F-35, the aircraft that we've been told was going to take the place of the F-22. We don't need so many of these superb air superiority aircraft, Bob Gates assured us in the last one of his budget-cutting rounds, because the F-35 will be perfectly adequate. Well, it seems the F-35 is undergoing some budget cuts of its own. We won't have as many as we needed. Heretofore, we will stretch out the production of them. We will increase, of course, the costs. But we won't have the number of F-22s that we previously anticipated. Before we knew about the J-20, we previously anticipated were going to be needed. And so if Rick Fisher is right, that the Chinese are building an aircraft that will be superior to the F-35, and we don't have enough F-22s, that very substantially raises the stakes that in a future conflict, should it come to that with China, we will not have air superiority, something that we have taken for granted for decades because we've always enjoyed it. And that's a very bad bit of business for people on the ground or at sea if, in fact, you don't enjoy that kind of air dominance. But this isn't, of course, the only thing that the Chinese are up to. We've been hearing lately about, and talked here at Secure Freedom Radio, about ballistic missiles, advanced, highly accurate ballistic missiles that the Chinese apparently are deploying now, we're told by the commander of our Pacific forces, for the purpose of attacking and destroying American carrier battle groups. We've learned more and more about the unrestricted warfare program that the Chinese have been putting into place, capabilities to attack us in numerous ways, not just of a military character, and certainly not of a conventional military character alone. Unconventional forces, terrorism, financial attacks, cyber warfare, of course, using their considerable economic power as well. Not least of which we are hearing of late, new decisions out of Beijing to cut back on the export of rare earth minerals, as we've talked about with, among others, Gordon Chang. That's a means of forcing American and other Western high-tech companies to move to China so that they can be given access to those rare earth minerals, which the Chinese have been allowed to have a 97% or 98% monopoly on. Materials that are vital to not only our commercial enterprises of high-tech character, but also weapon systems on which our future security depends. Assuming, of course, we're still building any, which it remains to be seen when Bob Gates and the Congress, in fairness, including Republicans in the Congress, who are now making much of their commitment to cutting the budget by cutting our national security expenditures. Remains to be seen what we will have left when all of this is done. What I worry most about, I must tell you, is that what we will have left is a vacuum of power. And what history has taught us again and again and again is that those vacuums of power get filled, often by people, and I would put the Chinese high on this list, who are not friends of ours. Now, among the other military capabilities that are being built up here, of course, are also the nuclear weapons programs of Communist China. On the heels of the new START treaty, which reduces our arsenal to 1,550, the Chinese may well have a number that they can meet and exceed with a concerted buildup now underway. Intercontinental ballistic missiles, long-range sea-launch ballistic missiles, aircraft, cruise missiles, you name it. And oh, by the way, President Obama has given a veto in this new START treaty, effectively, to the Russians on missile defenses. Don't want to have missile defenses that could protect us against China. Oh, no, that could be destabilizing, we're told. All of this gives rise, I have to say, to a profound sense of unease, a déjà vu. A movie we've seen before that does not come out well. Whenever we signal weakness, irresolution, let alone retreat, the world becomes a more dangerous place. Is that what the American people expect of their government? Democrats and Republicans alike, I think not. We will work here at Secure Freedom Radio, and I hope you will as well, to ensure that very unpleasant result is not, in fact, in our future. So my thoughts, welcome yours. SecureFreedomRadio.com or the Frank Gaffney Twitter or Facebook accounts. Let me know what you think. Next up, Faith McDonald on Sudan. What's going to happen? What will it mean for you?
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
The holidays come and go, but the pictures are forever. How do you want to look? Now is a perfect time to make a new start for the new year ahead. And the first step is calling Judy Singer's MetaSystem at 800-711-JUDY.
On the MetaSystem, I lost 10 pounds the first week, and overall, I think it was 12 weeks, I lost 46 pounds.
Over the past 3 months, I've lost approximately 47 pounds.
With the MetaSystem, I lost 50 pounds.
Looking slimmer and feeling better isn't the whole story. Call 800-711-JUDY right now. The MetaSystem has worked effectively for thousands, and it can and will work for you. And with your MetaSystem purchase by December 29th, Judy Singer will take 10% off and throw in a free Go Anywhere tote as your Christmas gift. If you're already on MetaSystem, call and see what we've got waiting for you. Say goodbye to the old you, say hello to the new you. Judy Singer's MetaSystem works. Call now, 800-711-JUDY. That's 800-711-JUDY. J-U-D-Y.
Terrorist threats, global economic recession, monumental government spending, continued job losses, healthcare reform. Who can sort all of this out? Hudson Institute. Since its founding nearly 50 years ago, Hudson Institute continues to lead the pack in groundbreaking policy research. John McCain said Hudson continues to make the world less threatening to our security and more hospitable to our values. To read the latest commentary and research from Hudson's world-renowned policy experts, visit our website at www.hudson.org. You can sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, keep up to date on our latest events, podcasts, and exclusive video features, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Visit www.hudson.org.
This is the greatest country in the world. Every day, people in America live in 100% freedom. Our military allows us to do that. It's comforting to know that when American lives are lost in defense of our freedom, an organization like TAPS is there to help the friends and families of those who have died while serving our country.
TAPS, the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. Visit us online at TAPS.org or call 1-800-959-TAPS.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are joined by Faith McDonald. She is the Director of Religious Liberty at a very valuable institution here in town, Washington, D.C., the Institute for Religion and Democracy. And Faith has been following closely threats to religious liberty and, for that matter, folks more generally, especially at the hands of people who are seeking, in the name of Sharia, or for other purposes, to deny individuals and communities the freedom to practice their faith, whatever it may be. And there are quite a number of people in southern Sudan who have an opportunity on the 9th of January to establish an independent nation in which they will be free to practice Christianity or traditional animist or other African religions. And Faith is one of the leaders in trying to ensure that that vote is free and fair and fulfills the ambitions of the people of southern Sudan. So, Faith McDonald, thank you so much for joining us here at Secure Freedom Radio on the eve of this momentous vote. It's perhaps the beginning of a very happy new year indeed.
Yes, you're very welcome, and I'm glad to be with you and to talk about this historic moment.
Tell us a little bit about the background again. We've been touching upon it with some regularity here at Secure Freedom Radio, but I think it's important to explain what is it that led to this particular vote and has made this such indeed a momentous event.
This vote is the culmination of the 2005 Comprehensive Peace Agreement between the Sudanese government in the north and the SPLM, the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, in the south, who really represented all the marginalized people of Sudan. Part of that peace agreement was that after 5 years, there would be a vote on whether or not the south wanted to separate from the north or to remain in unity. And during the 5 years, the government of Sudan was supposed to try to, quote, make unity attractive, but they never did a very good job of that. In fact, they continued on in their agenda of trying to Islamize and Arabize the whole country. People could see what they were still doing in Darfur. They didn't fulfill peace agreement provisions. So it's overwhelmingly sure that when people begin to vote in the referendum on January the 9th, that they will vote for secession, for independence.
Good. That would be what they would be able to do if they were, in fact, free to vote. We had the president of Sudan, the guy coming down from Khartoum in the north, a radical Islamist by the name of Bashir, the man who is being prosecuted for war crimes in some fashion up in The Hague. He was making very benign noises during a recent visit to the south. Faith, tell us what we should make of that. Is it is it the real deal, or is it part of perhaps a dissembling operation that may cover a much more insidious, characteristic kind of oppressive behavior?
That's a good question, Frank. The rule to go by is you can never trust Omar al-Bashir. You can never trust the National Congress Party, the Islamists who rule Sudan. But they're very smart, strategic people. And if there's some benefit for him in allowing the South to secede at this point, then I believe he'll do that. Just as there was benefit for them in signing a peace agreement after they had declared jihad. And once you declare jihad, it can't be rescinded. So, but there's this, you know, dissimulation, this taqiyya that allows them to do things that, that look different than they really are. So it may be that Bashir just feels enough pressure from the whole international community, because really it's pretty remarkable that all eyes are on South Sudan right now that never were when they were being slaughtered in massive numbers during the first genocide. But people are paying attention now, so Bashir may feel he has to do this for the time being.
Now, Faith McDonald, again, from the Institute for Religion and Democracy, and you can find out much more about the important work of the Institute at theird.org. It's a great resource on Sudan, to be sure, but on much, much more as well. And Faith, what has happened, as you know so well, when the government of Sudan wishes to work its will but doesn't want to be caught out at it, is they use surrogates.
Yes.
The Janjaweed, most notoriously, as a sort of paramilitary terrorizing operation with clear government backing and assistance, but nonetheless some sort of plausible deniability. We have Al Jazeera that has promoted, as it usually does, the sort of enemy propaganda line in the form of information warfare. We have Al-Shabaab, the Somali terrorist organization, Sharia adherent, that can become another proxy force, perhaps. Are you seeing at the moment, Faith McDonald, those kinds of entities playing a role that would be at odds with what we're being told is the, as I say, the rather more benign approach of the government itself.
Yes, Frank, you're right. The government of Sudan has often used proxy militias and the Janjaweed, people like that. And that has been going on in some areas, skirmishes between people. They know how to play one side against another. They pay people to do things. But this will also cause problems after the referendum. If the referendum goes forth freely and fairly and the South secedes, we believe that one plot could be that the Arabists who are working with Khartoum from around the Arab world will try to do things to destabilize the new country and to declare it a failed state so that it won't be accepted in such a way. And, you know, we both the real bad actors like Libya and Somalia, people like that, but also people like Egypt who are concerned about the waters of the Nile and Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. Let me add to that list, or at least ask you to address as a possible addition to the list of bad actors in Sudan, Communist China. I've been talking a bit earlier in the program about some of its mischief-making. Are you seeing its hand at work here one way or the other as a country that's deeply involved in trying to access the oil resources of Sudan and playing, at least in the past, a rather nefarious role in so doing?
Yes, they did play a nefarious role, and the Chinese oil companies were complicit in the death of many people in the south of Sudan. But right now, we don't see a lot of activity. I think that President Salva Kiir, the president of the regional government of South Sudan, and his cabinet have been having talks with the Chinese and trying to assure them that you know, that they'll be able to buy oil from the South if the South secedes. So I have not heard a lot at this point about the Chinese, but I would, you know, I would definitely keep that in mind.
Yeah, keep your weather eye out for them, as they say. Faith, we've got less than a minute left, but just very quickly. What does all this mean for us from a religious freedom point of view, as well as more generally our way of life, how this distant country and its future plays out very quickly?
Well, South Sudan, the people of South Sudan are the most courageous people in terms of wanting their religious freedom. They have not been dimified like Christians or other non-Muslims around the world. They'll be great allies to us. They understand the Arab mind. The SPLA, the army, can be trained to be a very good army and be a real asset on the continent of Africa.
And an oil-rich one at that. Well, yes. Faith McDonald will be watching this closely with your help, I hope. And we thank you so much for the great work that you and the Institute for Religion and Democracy do. Keep it up, and please come back to us with an update after all of the votes are counted. Next
great.
Up,
thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Next up, we'll be talking with Pete King, a fantastically interesting interview with a very important new chairman in the House of Representatives.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Can I have a price check on aisle... ma'am?
Yeah.
Don't look down, but there's a giant python wrapped around your leg.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's probably nothing.
Nothing? Shouldn't I don't know, like, call someone?
No, I don't have the time. I'm late as it is. If it keeps up, I haven't looked at.
Are you sure? That's a pretty big snake.
No, I'm fine. Thank you, though. You're very sweet.
You wouldn't ignore this, so why ignore the signs of a stroke? If you or someone you know suddenly experiences numbness of the face, arm, or leg, or sudden trouble speaking, seeing, or walking, don't wait to get help. Call 911 right away, because time lost is brain lost. To find out more, visit www.strokeassociation.org or call 1-888-4-STROKE. This message brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This morning, a woman reached out. A man stepped up. A family drove their elderly neighbor to the doctor. Someone took 2 hours of their morning to help someone else find affordable childcare near work. Somebody sat down with 16-year-old Steven and taught him better note-taking skills and study habits, and suddenly, toughing it out till graduation seemed to Steven a pretty good idea. All this happened today. It'll happen tomorrow. It's happening here, there, right down the street. People are living united. We're not just wearing the shirt, we're living it. We're realizing that the way we live our lives can impact the way others live theirs, their education, their income, even their health. So do something, any little something, as long as it's something. Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
I'll pick you up after school. Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit, make a plan, be informed today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
Radio that improves your chances for survival in a dangerous world. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. This is one of those segments that I personally have been looking forward to enormously, and I think you'll find profoundly important. It is a conversation with Congressman Pete King. Bill O'Reilly has said he's the most important man in the new Congress. I don't know if you'll agree with that. He's a modest man, but I know that the work that he's doing is as important as any that the Congress will be taking up in the 112th Congress. And that involves a set of hearings that you, Congressman Pete King, the incoming chairman, the new, I should say, chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee, have announced you intend to engage in on the whole question of, radical Islam, Sharia, whatever one wants to call it, but what we're up against in terms of the threat. And I'd love to get your take, just sort of as an introduction to the piece, as to what you think needs to be looked into by your committee at this moment in time.
Well, first of all, Frank, thank you very much. You know, thanks for the kind introduction. And I certainly do look forward to being chairman of the Homeland Security Committee again. I was chairman briefly back in 05 and 06.
Right.
Before the Democrats took over. And the main thing I want to do is get the committee back to working on Homeland Security. We, in the last several years, never covered Guantanamo, never covered the Fort Hood shootings, never had any extensive hearings into radicalization. All of that is going to change under my chairmanship. Now, as far as the hearings on radicalization of the Muslim community, the reality is that many of the defenses, or the layer of defenses that we have set up over the last 9 years, has made it very difficult for Al-Qaeda to attack us from the outside. They can, but it's much, much more difficult than it was. They have adapted in turn, and they are now recruiting from within the United States, from within the Muslim community, from Muslims who are below the radar screen, who are living here legally, who have roots in the community. Zazi, who was the attempted New York subway bomber a year and a half ago, he went to public high schools in Queens, had a small business in Lower Manhattan. Major Hassan, who murdered 13 innocent people at Fort Hood, was obviously a major in the United States Army. Shahzad, who attacked Times Square last May, was actually a naturalized citizen.
Yep.
And we can go through a whole list of others, whether it's Headley in Chicago, whether it's in cases in Baltimore, Texas, New Jersey, the Bronx. These are people living here legally in the country. Now, that is almost to be expected. What is not expected is the fact that we get very little cooperation from people living within the Muslim community, yeah. The leadership of the Muslim community. There's one case, I'll just give as an example, and there's others, in Minnesota, where Al-Shazab, the Somali terrorist organization, was actually recruiting young kids, I mean kids, 15, 16 years old, to be suicide bombers in Somalia. A number of them were killed. The parents of young boys in this community went to law enforcement and asked for something to be done. When an investigation was begun, the imam in the mosque instructed his members not to cooperate with the investigation. I can give examples in my own district of after 9/11 of prominent Muslims saying that the Jews could have attacked Ground Zero, the FBI, the CIA. So this is a pattern, and yep. It's a matter of survival for our nation that we identify this and we focus attention on it.
I couldn't agree with you more. Congressman Pete King of the 3rd District of New York, new chairman once more, restored chairman, I guess is the way to think of it,
right.
Of the Homeland Security Committee. If I could just drill down on that for a moment, Congressman King,
what
you're talking about, and it's you earned you the appellation that I've been given myself of being a racist and a bigot
right.
And an Islamophobe, but it sounds like what you're recognizing, thank God, is that within the Muslim community, even in this country, let alone elsewhere, folks are finding an environment in which, on the one hand, it's very easy to be radicalized, if you will, to be brought to an adherence to Sharia, which leads to jihad, but also that there's an enormous pressure on those within the community, presumably, I would imagine you agree, from the Muslim Brotherhood, which is much in place in this country, to not to come forward, not to help us defeat what really is our common foe, namely the folks who would impose Sharia on all of us.
Yeah, and Frank, this is very unusual for our country because despite a person's ethnic background or religious background, when a war begins, we're all Americans. But in this case, that is not the situation. And whether it is pressure, whether it's cultural tradition or whatever, the fact is the Muslim community does not cooperate anywhere near to the extent that it should. And you know, the irony here is we're really living in two different worlds. One is the real world that I find when I'm talking with police officers, talking to federal law enforcement authorities. And when I raise the question of Muslim cooperation, they look at me like, no, of course not. No, there's no cooperation. No, you know, we don't anticipate that. You know, we never, almost never expect cooperation. They try, but hardly ever get it. Then you read in the papers or the, you know, listen to the media, and it's out there about how we're one big happy family, everyone's working together. Anyone like Gaffney or King who raises this issue is a bigot. And the fact is that anyone dealing with the real situation just takes it as a matter of fact that there's not going to be cooperation.
Yeah. Well, Congressman King, I this is so critical, and I trust this is going to be one of the things you get into in the hearings, is it, we hear, and I think you're absolutely right, at the sort of street level, the working level, a lot of common sense about all this, but at the senior levels of our government, the Director of National Intelligence, the FBI Director, CIA, so on, are much about, the Homeland Security Secretary, Janet Napolitano most especially, are much about the idea that, well, we're reaching out to Muslim American organizations like your friends, the Council on American Islamic Relations, right, and the Islamic Society of North America and MPAC and on, most of whom are known by our government to be Muslim Brotherhood front organizations. So is it really any wonder that we're getting no real cooperation, even when we reach out to them, as the DNI said, as a source of wisdom?
Yeah, well, even if you remember after Fort Hood, General Casey, the Army Chief of Staff, said it would be a worse tragedy than the 13 innocent people who were killed if we alienated Muslims as a result of these killings.
Diversity. Diversity is surpassingly important. Right.
The leadership in not just the Muslim community, unfortunately, the leadership in our government systematically across the board does go along with this politically correct nonsense. And they know it's not true. And what they've set up now is a situation where they give credit to Muslims for cooperating when they're not cooperating. And we know they're not cooperating. And then when someone such as myself says we're going to have hearings, they oppose the hearings on the ground that hearings are going to alienate the Muslim community. And so, you know, this is like a vicious cycle that's been set up here.
It is.
Which is why I'm not even going to, you know, get into a long, involved debate. I'm just going ahead and do it. I mean, that's where, you know, the New York Times can attack me, yeah, and the other, and CARE and all their, proselytizers in the media who say, I want to set up internment camps, I want to grab every Muslim off the street and subpoena him and all this nonsense. I'm just going to ignore it and go straight ahead and have these hearings, because I think the common sense of the American people is going to see through all this.
Well, God bless you, sir, and we look forward to covering them extensively, hopefully contributing in any way we can to these proceedings, because, as I said, I think they are the single most important piece of business that the United States Congress will be doing in this 112th session. Let me pivot from the stealth jihad piece of this, which is so critical that you understand and that you're working to counter, to a guy who clearly doesn't get it. And by the way, I spoke to your colleague, Congressman Mike Rogers, the new chairman of the Intelligence Committee, and he said he wants to get into this as well. James Cole, and now the number two man in the Holder Justice Department, you've been very critical of this recess appointment. Give us your sense of how this fits into the larger problem you want to address.
Yeah, it's a terrible decision for so many reasons. One is a recess appointment is always controversial. But if you're going to do a recess appointment, it shouldn't be on for someone such as Cole, who to me is as bad, if not worse, than Eric Holder. We are involved in a war with Islamic fundamentalism and terrorism, and yet you have someone like Cole who minimized the 9/11 attacks, basically said they were no different from drug deals or ordinary gang killings, that type thing.
He defended some of these guys as a lawyer.
Yeah. And for him not to see the difference, though, between what happened on 9/11, which most Americans saw that as such a singular moment, such an example of most horrific attack ever in the U.S., and we had to do all we can to prevent it from happening again. For Cole to just dismiss it, and then for the president to appoint him as the number two person in the Justice Department, when we still have not resolved the issue of whether there's going to be civilian trials, whether or not Guantanamo is going to be closed. And I thought to appoint him without allowing Congress to have hearings, without allowing this entire record to be brought out in a public forum, to me showed a real arrogance by the president, and that the left-wing ideology is still, he can talk about moving to the center. When he appoints someone like Cole, that shows where he's really coming from.
You're so right.
And it's very dangerous to the country.
Congressman, we have to let you go. I know you've got a day job to do. Thank you so much for joining us. God bless you and the work you're about. We look forward to visiting with you, I hope, in the future about this as often as you possibly can. In the meantime, keep up the great work. Next up, Sarah Carter on our building down our military as the Chinese build theirs up.
Miss a show? Find podcasts of Frank and the world's leading national security experts and policymakers at securefreedomradio.org.
My name is Sunday Hollis, and I totally lost the craving for sweets. I totally lost the craving for bread, even meat. And some people, you know, you would see people say, oh, well, you're eating a salad because you're trying to diet, but you just don't have a taste for any of the junk anymore. And it is so, so, so true.
I'm thinking this is something that the celebrities are using. They're just not giving the meta system the credit for it. I've tried everything under the sun, and this is the only product that I have even called the company and asked them, could I sell it for them? This is a product where you can actually use the word awesome. I mean, and it is the whole essence of the word awesome.
Don't wait another minute to start losing weight. Call Judy Singer's The Meta System at 1-800-711-JUDY. That's 1-800-711-JUDY.
Terrorist threats, global economic recession, monumental government spending, continued job losses, healthcare reform. Who can sort all of this out? Hudson Institute. Since its founding nearly 50 years ago, Hudson Institute continues to lead the pack in groundbreaking policy research. John McCain said Hudson continues to make the world less threatening to our security and more hospitable to our values. To read the latest commentary and research from Hudson's world-renowned policy experts, visit our website at www.hudson.org. You can sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, keep up to date on our latest events, podcasts, and exclusive video features, and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Visit www.hudson.org.
What are you doing?
Filling out a loan application.
I can help you get approved, you know.
Really? How?
With this.
A bag of sand?
It's not a bag. It's a pouch. And it's not sand. It's credit fairy dust.
Credit fairy dust?
Yes. I sprinkle some fairy dust on the application, and your credit rating magically improves.
There's no such thing as the credit fairy.
An unbeliever now. But what will you think when your loan is approved?
I'll think my credit score improved because I paid my bills on time, kept my credit card balances low, and only opened a new card if I really needed it.
It's the dust.
It's sand.
Don't deny the credit fairy.
There's no magic to improving your credit, but there is help, and it's free. Go to creditfairy.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the Consumer Bankers Foundation, the Leadership Conference on Civil Rights Education Fund, and the Ad Council.
Fire took place 3 years ago. There was a lightning strike. The winds picked up and the fire just took off. You're in shock. You don't know what you're feeling. You have nothing. I lost my home and 40 years worth of art. I never thought that I would need help from the Red Cross. They gave me emotional support to get up in the morning. I'll never forget what the Red Cross did for me.
Contact your local Red Cross chapter or visit redcross.org.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are joined by one of our all-time favorite contributors, our duty expert on what's going on inside the Pentagon, and there's a lot going on inside the Pentagon at the moment. She's Sarah Carter. She is the national security correspondent par excellence of the Washington Examiner, one of our really revered assets in place at the moment as we reckon with the defense budget of the United States being seriously cut, not by critics, not by the left, not even by, you know, folks on Capitol Hill who are sort of the usual suspects, but by the Secretary of Defense himself. Sarah, as we speak at this moment, we have not got the formal bill of particulars as to what Secretary of Defense Robert Gates has in mind, but we know some worrying things about it, and it's great to have you with us to at least try to understand what the implications of this serious cutting is going to be, and the start of what may not be such a happy new year, I'm sorry to say. Happy new year to you just the same, but what are we to make of what Rob Gates has got in mind?
Happy New Year to you too, Frank. Well, certainly today is going to be, it's a big day. I mean, Defense Secretary Robert Gates and Admiral Michael Mullen are, you know, going to be speaking to top lawmakers today regarding what they say is a $100 billion cuts in cost savings.
And that's
for the Pentagon.
Billion as in boy, oh
billion.
Boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, as in boy, oh boy, they are cutting, 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 and trimming the fat everywhere and making some people very, very upset and uneasy. I mean, just let me give you an example.
But let me just ask you a quick question. And maybe this is what you're going to go to. You use the term cutting the fat. My feeling about this is that we've been past cutting the fat for some time. We've been into muscle, and maybe we're now into bone. But talk to us about the F-35 as an example.
Well, the F-35 is an example. I mean, here you have, you know, for I think maybe half a decade, Gates has wanted to cut back on this alternate engine for, you know, I think it's a Lockheed Martin F-35 Joint Strike Fighter. And there's a lot of lawmakers who are upset about this. They've refused to kill the program. You have Howard McKeon, who just took over and was sworn in as the House Armed Services Committee chairman on Wednesday. And he's upset right now because he's hearing that Gates has plans to cut the Marine Corps' Expeditionary Fighting Vehicle, which is being developed by General Dynamics. And, you know, this is a certified requirement for capability. It's basically a landing craft that goes from sea to land. And, you know, Gates is saying, well, we don't need this. We don't need these programs. But what they're saying is like, wait a minute, stop. We do need these programs. We do need to keep up our defenses because for some reason, you know, there are those in the Pentagon, Gates and others, who believe, you know, ever since September 11th and even a little bit before that, that we're looking at a different world. It's not a world with a nation fighting another nation. It's a world of counterinsurgency and terrorism only. And although that is my forte and that's what I focus on a lot, there is this other mindset that says, hey, wait a minute, this is not about that. China is still a formidable, I mean, although it's not considered overtly an enemy, it's still an enemy to us. There are other nations out there, like North Korea, like Iran, and even people in our own hemisphere, in Venezuela, you know, who are enemies of our nation. And we have to look at this as a twofold problem, both the problem of terrorism and the problem of insurgencies, as well as, you know, a nation upon nation World War II style war fighting capability that we need to maintain, and we need to maintain our missile defense systems.
Right.
So,
Sarah Carter, let me just ask you this, because you touched on China. I think anybody looking at China would have to say, at the very least, they are a potential enemy. They have in their doctrine unrestricted warfare against the United States. They're building military capabilities. In fact, we've been treated to stories in one of your competitors, the Wall Street Journal, 2 days running now, about this new advanced fighter aircraft. I spoke about it at the beginning of the show in my monologue. They call it the J-20, perhaps about as capable a stealth air superiority fighter as the F-22, certainly we're told more capable than the F-35, with either of its engines supposedly going to be the backbone under the Gates plan of our air capabilities in the future. But it really does raise this question. Are folks in the Pentagon, or the government more generally, simply turning a blind eye to emerging capabilities and threatening ones at that coming from places like China?
I think that in some cases they are. I don't think that they think it's a realistic possibility in the future. But let me tell you, we do not have a crystal ball. We cannot look into that crystal ball and say, oh, no, we never have to worry about China again. China, you know, won't ever be a problem for us in the future. We can't say that. China's developing stealth jets. And in a few years, this J-20 will be able to, you know, will be fully functional. And according to the reports, it'll be able to reach U.S. territory carrying large missiles. I mean, this is a serious jet system. I mean, it's going to be compatible with our F-22. So if we ignore
competitive with it,
the fact,
it's I guess the point is it's one aspect of a sort of an across the board improvement in capabilities that's very worrying. And as I said earlier, you know, the fact that we seem to be ignoring it or not taking the sorts of steps that are necessary to contend with what China could become very easily is these trajectories play out is perhaps to invite the very kind of aggressive behavior that we want to deter. Sarah, we're going to run out of time before we run out of topics. Very quickly, let me ask you to turn to another area of the world that you've been following closely. As you say, it's been the principal focus of late for the Pentagon.
namely Afghanistan. We've got, as you've reported recently, two narrowly thwarted Taliban attacks in the so-called quiet period, when there's not supposed to be, you know, real military operations going on. But yet you also warn that there are real inroads being made by the Taliban in the north. We're told just today that Secretary Gates, amidst all these budget cuts, is trying to surge another 1,000 combat troops into Afghanistan, and yet the president's going to start trying to take them out in July. Give us your read on what's going on in Afghanistan and what it means for us.
Well, the president certainly has made that very clear, that he wants to begin the drawdown in July. For our guys on the ground, our military commanders, they know that this is a very tenuous situation. Afghanistan is not where it should be by any means. The Afghan security forces are nowhere near where they need to be to take over their own security in Afghanistan. What's even more disheartening is that the Taliban, over the last few years, has resurged, and we see that they are moving into the north. We see that even with these two attacks being thwarted in the last 3 weeks, we know that their capabilities are a lot stronger than they were just a few years ago in the north. So we're looking at a very serious situation in Afghanistan, and a lot of folks are saying, hey, wait, look, we shouldn't give a drawdown date. We shouldn't give the Taliban any kind of reason to say, look, the U.S., NATO is going to leave, and we're going to wait them out, and we're going to stay as long as possible. And this is the problem. What we have done in the last maybe 3 years, 4 years, is we've given the Taliban this kind of free propaganda tool, you know, and particularly after announcing the drawdown date over a year ago when the president said that. So what we've seen is now more recruitment, heavier recruitment in areas where we haven't seen them in the past, and our military is working diligently to try to get those who are in charge, those leaders, those Taliban leaders, and detain them. But we know that there's problems with that as well. Karzai's government is negotiating with the Taliban.
Which we're encouraging them to do, right?
Yes, which we're encouraging them to do. We flip-flop on that, too. One day we're encouraging them, the next day we're upset with them, the next day we're encouraging them, and we see Karzai playing games with us, and we support his government despite all the evidence that we've seen to the contrary. And you know, this is becoming a very dangerous situation. South Asia at the moment is on rocky road, and we know this. So we're working diligently to try to go after these Taliban leaders, but it's not easy, particularly when we're dealing with Pakistan and other areas.
Yeah, and it's not being uniformly done. And Sarah, we're going to have to come back to you very soon to talk about this assassination of an anti-Sharia governor in Pakistan, what that portends, really, and assassinations that are taking place in Iraq frequently now, the return of Muqtada al-Sadr, and, of course, a very important piece that you've just written about Turkey's real views about the nuclear threat from Iran. So we'll be looking forward to talking to you next week. In the meantime, Happy New Year, and thank you so much for the great work you're doing. Keep it up. And thanks to all of you for listening. I hope you'll do so again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks so much for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.